flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Okay, business leaders, are you playing defense or are you on the offense? Are you just, excuse me, hey, I'm trying to talk business here. As I was saying, are you here just to play or are you playing to win? If you're in it to win, meet your next MVP, NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is your full business management system in one suite. With NetSuite, you're running your accounting, your financials, HR, e-commerce, and more, all from your online dashboard. One source of truth means every department's working from the same numbers with no data delays. And with AI embedded throughout, you're automating manual tasks, plus getting fast insights for your next move. Whether you're competing on your home turf or looking to conquer international markets, NetSuite helps you get the W. Over 40,000 businesses have already made the move to NetSuite, the number one cloud ERP.
Right now, get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/special. Get this free guide at netsuite.com/special.
Okay, guys.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
We will rally around Kurt Warner.
Kurt Warner.
You're a big horse, and you must be ridden every Monday night.
Two-time NFL MVP.
They talk about this, the greatest show on turf, maybe the best offense ever in football.
Super Bowl champion.
Warner to throw. Going deep downfield. Adjusting for it is Isaac Bruce. Touchdown. 73 yards.
Pro Football Hall of Famer.
Not just the NFL Hall of Fame. And I wear that as a badge of honor because without pro football, in all its forms and fashions, I'm not here tonight.
Radio analyst for Westwood One Sports.
Touchdown, Saquon Barkley! He is incredible!
What you can do in 18 plays, we can do in one. That is the way the Eagles are built in their run game. They have a home run hitter at the running back position, and he can go the distance at any point in time.
NFL Network analyst.
Do you have a doomsday folder in case someone wanted to interview you to be a head coach?
I do not have a folder.
Kurt Warner with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Fantastic to be able to talk with our friend Kurt Warner. He joins us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. CircaLasVegas.com. Kurt, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
You got it. Been a while, guys, but good to talk to you.
Yeah, man. And, you know, heard a lot of you on the broadcast doing the Eagles and the Commanders. And we were like, man, that guy, he knows quarterbacking. He knows the NFL. And we have an official head coach in Ben Johnson. So let's get to all of it. First off, that Eagles offense doesn't seem very stoppable right now to me. Why is it working so well, what they have?
Well, I mean, I think it starts with the players. It starts with talent. They've got talent all over their offense. It's pick your poison because they've got arguably the best offensive line in football, maybe them in Detroit. You could go back and forth. Really athletic up front. Of course, they've got, as you just heard there, the home run hitter, maybe the best back in the National Football League in Saquon Barkley. And what does make them different? is they do get big plays in the run game. You know, unlike a lot of teams that use the run to set up big plays in the pass game, they're a team that can get big plays and do get big plays. I mean, nobody had more big plays in the NFL this year than Saquon Barkley. And obviously most of them were when you're handing the ball off to him and he's got that breakaway speed. So it starts there. Is they're so good there and so good at the running back spot. You have a threat to run and do some things in Jalen Hurts, but they've also got playmakers on the outside that if you want to stack the box against them and you give A.J. Brown one-on-one, I mean, what cornerback in the league is stopping him one-on-one? And then complementary pieces are good on the outside as well. So it all starts up front, the ability to protect Jalen Hurts, the ability to create holes for Saquon Barkley, and then everything else is just basically – you got to pick your poison. There's nothing that you could go in and say, hey, if we just stop this, they can't beat us. That's not the case with this Eagles team. And that's what always makes it tough. You know, every time you go into a big game, you talk to anybody. It doesn't matter how good the quarterback is. Doesn't matter how good the running back is. They always say, we got to make them one dimensional. We've got to stop something and hope that then we can, you know, do what we do and force them to go away from their strength or force them to have to do something to beat us. And that's our best chance. And with this team, I just don't know. Yeah, obviously you want to take away Saquon Barkley and you want to take away the run game, but they just have the capabilities of beating you both ways. They're really good at doing a lot of different things. And it's what's going to make it a challenge for this Chiefs defense.
I'm a fan of Jalen Hurts. And I still have a really hard time like assessing his value as a quarterback. How do you look at him and say, this is what he is, this is what he can do, and this is how he could win?
Well, I mean, I think the thing with Jalen, and here's the thing with most quarterbacks in the league, that they're not great at everything. But you have to be great at enough things. And that's who Jalen Hurts is. He's great at enough things. You know, there's times he holds on to the ball too long. There's times when there's opportunities in front of him and he doesn't throw it or he doesn't see it. You know, so that's the thing that when you hear a lot of, you know, analysts talk, like that's the frustrating part. Because I know he's capable of doing those things physically, like making those throws. But when you don't see it and when you miss an easy opportunity in front of him, you're like, ah, he got to be better in that area. And he probably does. He's got a lot of room to grow in that area. But there's so many other things that he does that even oftentimes when he holds the football, it doesn't become a negative play. That he might hold it and he might miss a shot down the field, but he turns it into a six-yard gain because he buys time and he's athletic enough and he makes a play. He might miss the blitz. And so I was just looking at the blitz tape because I think it's going to be key in the Super Bowl. But they had a free runner come at him, you know, down in the red zone last week with Washington. And, you know, he's running around crazy back there and runs about 10 yards deep. But then that's the one he flips up to Devontae Smith and they get the PI and sets him up on the 1 yard line. So he's got the ability to make up for some of the deficiencies. And then, you know, he's a really good thrower of the football. If he knows where he wants to go with it, as we saw on that 4th and 5 that he dropped right on top of AJ Brown, like a handoff, 40 yards down the field that really turned that game. He's got the ability to run the quarterback draw. And we saw him score 2 touchdowns, although one was called back in the game on the quarterback draw. So there's the RPO game. You know, Patrick Mahomes is the best in the league at that. But I also think Jalen Hurts is one of the better guys in the league at pulling it and getting out on the edge and seeing guys and making plays. So there's just so many things that he does well, although he doesn't do everything great and there's areas he can improve. He's got a number of things that he does really, really well. And it complements what they want to do and what they're able to do because of their run game and what they have up front, that's why he wins. You know, sometimes he doesn't take a chance with a football and he just pulls it down and turns it into a 4 or 5 yard gain. And he's willing to live with that where other quarterbacks are always trying to make that play. And I think it's one of the reasons that he's such a great winner is my team's good. We can win on defense. We can win running the football. We don't have to win with me throwing 300 yards a game, although I can. We don't have to win that way. So I can be smarter and maybe a little more conservative with the football. And that's okay, because we've got the formula that allows me to do it. And then, as we saw in the last Super Bowl between these two teams, he can also throw for 300 yards. Or as we saw in the championship game, thought he, you know, threw the ball extremely well in that game, made good decisions, pushed the ball down the field when he needed to. So the capabilities are there. He's just happy to do, as he always says, do what I have to do for us to be successful.
Kurt Warner with us here on Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score. Kurt, your former offensive coordinator, Mike Martz, was on this show the day that the Bears hired Ben Johnson. Before Ben Johnson spoke, we reached out to Mike Martz, and he was terrific in talking about Ben, a guy he got to know when Mike did a visit down to Miami when Ben was an assistant. And Ben was clearly really smart and asked a lot of good questions, and they kept a relationship. And Mike Martz is a fan of Ben Johnson. Here's your former offensive coordinator, Mike Martz, talking about the Bears' new head coach.
Very smart, very, very passionate. I just think that he's a superstar. You know, I think it's been coming for a long time, but he's prepared for this. I don't know if I've seen anybody call a game better than him.
Have you ever talked about Ben Johnson with Mike Martz is the first question. Has that come up?
No, we have not talked about Ben, no.
Okay. But do you share Mike's
admiration
for Ben Johnson as a play caller and offensive designer in the NFL?
Yeah, I really like what he does. You know, the one caveat, I think, with all of it is that they also had the pieces to be able to do it, and a lot of different kinds of pieces. But, I thought Ben was really good. I mean, I like his scheme. I like the way he sets it up. You know, we've talked a lot about pure progression on here, and he does a number of pure progression type plays, but he builds in a lot of the defender read stuff that I love to connect with the pure progression. So he's got, you know, different concepts within the pure progression that fit in putting defenders in conflict in certain ways. So, you know, his ability to be creative is, you know, that was one thing that I thought Mike was great at when we played, when I played for him, was he was very creative, and he would try things out of the box, and he would throw new things at the defense every single week. You see that same stuff with Ben Johnson, is that every week there was something. I mean, they got offensive tackles, you know, throwing passes, and they've got, you know, hook and lateral type plays, you know, every other week. I mean, just all kinds of creative stuff that they would do. So I am a big fan of, you know, what he does from an offensive coordinating standpoint.
With Caleb Williams, and Ben kind of mentioned this in his opening press conference, he was talking directly to Caleb at the time, which I thought was great, is he was saying that he wants to break this thing all the way down and start building a new offense with Caleb, and said, look, we've got to spend time together. We've got to get in a room and watch film together to figure out what each person likes. So if you go from having a season in the league and now you got to kind of start over with someone who has a different vision for who you are and what you are as a quarterback, how should Caleb embrace this? What are the things that you hope Ben Johnson works with him and builds him back up to being, I think, the prospect that all of us are excited about?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think, you know, for me, when I think about quarterbacks, I think about all quarterbacks seeing the game differently. And so, you know, I always kind of use the analogy that you could take three Hall of Fame quarterbacks and you could draw a play up on the board, and one would just love it. Like, oh my gosh, call that 10 times a game. The next guy would be like, oh, I like that. That's a good play. I can work with that. And then you might have a third that goes, I hate that play. I don't like it. And it's the exact same play. And every detail is the exact same play, but each quarterback kind of sees the game differently. And so another analogy for that is I was in the West Coast system for just a short period of time in Green Bay, and I hated it. It didn't make sense to me. It didn't add up. I didn't like the idea that so many of the plays were short to long as opposed to reading deep to short. And so the way I saw the game just didn't mesh with the West Coast offense. And, you know, and you sit back and go, my gosh, it made how many quarterbacks, Hall of Fame quarterbacks, great quarterbacks, MVP quarterbacks in this league, but it just didn't mesh with how I saw the game and how I like to read the game. And so then I got together with Mike Martz, and he always had touchdown options in every play. And we were trying to push the ball down the field, and we were always trying to be aggressive. And that fit me perfectly. That's who I was. So why we had so much success so quickly was because we saw the game the same way. And that to me becomes the first part of the process, is not just taking plays that they had in Detroit and going, oh, this play worked really, really well for Jared Goff, we're going to run that here. It's sitting down with Caleb and going, how do you see the game? What makes sense to you? You know, what did you struggle with last year? Because they probably had some similar plays in Detroit that they ran in Chicago, but Caleb may have struggled with it. Why did you struggle with it? What don't you like about this? And getting an understanding of how they each see the game, and then being able to try to mesh that vision point together, is to me the most important thing. Because just because it's worked and just because one quarterback likes it doesn't mean the next one will, and they'll be as comfortable in it. And so it's finding an offense and building an offense that both guys are extremely comfortable with. And sometimes you're going to have to make concessions. Now, I remember when Ken Wisenhunt came to Arizona, and he came from, you know, the Pittsburgh background, which was a tight end, a fullback, under center, a lot of play action, drop back type stuff. And I felt I could do that, and I had done a lot of it, but our team wasn't built that way. We didn't have a great tight end. We didn't have a fullback. We didn't have a power running game, so we had to become kind of a three, four wide system because of who we were, and that obviously fit my skill set. And so we were constantly, you know, massaging our offense to fit both of us. There was a game in Chicago, I still remember to this day, where we ran what we call kind of a post-corner route. And it was more out of the play action, two wide receiver type set. And, you know, all week long, I told Coach, I'm like, I don't like this play, Coach. I don't like it. I don't like throwing it. I don't like having that as my only option. And he had to say, just trust me, Kurt. Like, this one's me. This is one that I like, and here's why. And so there was the give and take. We called it in the game. I threw a touchdown to Larry Fitzgerald, you know, walked over to the sideline, and he just had that smile on his face like, see, sometimes you got to trust me, because sometimes – you don't see it exactly like I do, but trust what I see, and then vice versa. And so that's the kind of massaging and the back and forth that goes on to building an offense that fits both of their vision and allows both of them to be the best version of themselves.
Well, that's the dream, is that Ben Johnson could have enough in his back pocket, enough knowledge that he builds it. And that's what he said. So I love that. It in that regard, Jared Goff spends a lot of time under center, man. I don't have the data for this year. Maybe you do, but for 2023, it was Goff and Kirk Cousins were the most under center, far and away, of any quarterbacks in the NFL. Is Ben Johnson going to make Caleb Williams go under center more? Should he?
Well, yes. I mean, I'm just a believer that you got to be able to do everything. Like, as a quarterback, yeah, you got to be able to take snaps under center. You got to be able to play the game under center. And it's one thing when, you know, when I start working with young quarterbacks, whether I was coaching in high school or just doing it on my own, I always have them start their drops and everything from under center. Learn how to do that, because it's still an important aspect of the game, whether it's, you know, beneficial to the run game, whether it's beneficial to play action, whatever that is, you have to be able to do that. And you have to be comfortable with that. And so I hope so. I mean, I hope Caleb can get comfortable with it, and I hope they use it, because you want all that stuff in your playbook and you want to be able to be comfortable with that. And so, yeah, maybe he hasn't been comfortable with that in the past, but to me, I think it's really, really important to do that.
Kurt, as always, we appreciate your time and your expertise. Thanks so much for joining us.
You got it. Good talking to you guys.
Thanks, Kurt.
Same. I like when we get to talk ball with Kurt Warner.
Oh, yeah, man.
I love that matches. We can play with it tomorrow, but that matches what Ben Johnson was saying. And that's why he wants Caleb and him to get into a room. Because I think he even said, like, he has to see what I see.
Right. They have to match. They have to have the same vision.
So, I mean, it makes me feel really good that he's saying stuff that, Kurt Warner is saying out of instinct, out of his history.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it can work. I love it.
Yeah,
I love it. I think he very much liked the hire. Our next guest, I'm not so sure. Joe Cowley is going to join us, and we're going to talk about Bulls. We always drift into a little bit of football because Joe loves to talk ball, and he loves to troll you. He'll do that next here on The Score.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you, so listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Championship belt is right here.
Joe Cowley.
Well, you know what? Joe Cowley writes something, he just, you know, going to write that just because, you know, you don't take that, when you are that type of media, I don't think you do it.
Columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times.
According to Joe Cowley of the Chicago Sun-Times.
Covering Chicago sports for over 20 years.
A little birdie told me.
Don't little bird me. I'm the dean of Get It Done University. Don't little bird me.
All the latest news and notes on your Chicago Bulls.
That's Billy Donovan, head coach of the Bulls. He has got to go deal with Joe Cowley and all the questions that Joe is going to ask him.
It's my pleasure. It's great to be with you guys.
Joe Cowley.
The standard is the standard.
With Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
We are going to talk with Joe Cowley momentarily. We have also been treated very well today here in the Score studio.
My goodness. The food from Peace Pizza, the great Peace Pizza over there in Bucktown.
Right on North Avenue.
Bill Jacobs and his place, Bro Bagel, right next door. They're working with Paws Chicago.
Yay.
And Peace is partnering with Doug Sohn of Hot Doug's. And we got a chance to hang out with both Bill and Doug today. Peace Pizza is offering an insane pizza that we've been eating. It features kielbasa, sliced potato, green onion, and a horseradish cream sauce. And it's crazy good. $10 of every pizza goes to Paws Chicago. Go to peacechicago.com for their great, great pizza.
All by myself. Nobody else eats.
Nobody.
Eat the pizza.
All of it. All of it. 100% of it. Just freaking delicious.
It was really nice to talk with Bill and Doug, and I love what they're doing with Paws. So, like, you get the pizza from Peace. It has a picture of a dog who is available for adoption on there. A little post-it note.
Spyro.
Yeah, man. And Doug and I kind of fell into the same category. Like, Paws is one of the places that I love to donate to. I will never step foot in there because I know what's going to happen to me. I'm going to have a whole bunch of dogs.
You're going to leave there with furry delights?
Yep. That's why I don't go over there. But I support them and their mission. And they're doing great stuff for animals here in the city. And I truly am, like, for me, for my favorite pizza to be hooked up with one of my favorite causes, very, very cool.
Awesome. So Hot Doug and Bill Jacobs, good work. Go to peacechicago.com and get one of those pies.
Joe Cowley now joins us here on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Check it out, CircaLasVegas.com. What's up, Mr. Handsome?
What's up, boys?
We're just hanging out trying to figure out what the Bulls are going to do and what makes sense. Like, what are some of the issues that the Bulls have to wade through when they're thinking of trade options?
First thing is,
like the rest of the NBA, they're held hostage by this Jimmy Butler thing. I think that's frustrating for not only the Bulls, but for a lot of teams because, you know, we're talking about probably the biggest divide of the haves and the have-nots that we've seen in the NBA in quite some time. And the problem is the haves, a lot of them are stuck in the apron, so they're kind of limited of how they can move the money and what they can do. And the haves all want Jimmy Butler. So, you know, I think the Bulls are frustrated with it. It was conveyed to us, the beat writers, when we were on the West Coast trip last week, that the Bulls would be willing to jump into the Jimmy Butler fray and be a fourth or fifth team if it gets that big. You know, Detroit's obviously a player in that because they have cap space. So they're a dumping ground for a lot of teams that would like to involve them if they could get more draft collateral. So I think, you know, I think there's a certain amount of frustration from Arturis Karnisovas that now that he's actually ready to do things and has kind of lowered the asking price on some of these guys, teams are kind of held hostage with Jimmy Butler, and now they may be held hostage with De'Aaron Fox. So I think they're waiting for this line to move, and once it does, I think it will move quickly.
Well, you hinted at my follow-up, which was going to be, is this the same old from AK and Eversley's perspective of weighing the value of being competitive and making the play-in versus reshaping the roster? But it sounds like you think they lean more towards time to take advantage of the deadline and reshape than perhaps they have in years past.
They want that top 10 pick this year. I can tell you that. They do want that pick. Now, the only way this goes haywire that they would not interfere with, say they make maybe it's not even a huge move. Say Zach stays, but maybe they move Vooch and they move Kobe. Just say they move those two. So a lot of young guys are playing now. Modis is playing more. Julian Phillips, Dalen Terry playing more. And all of a sudden, these young guys start finding something and they start winning games. They would not interfere with that if it was going to get them into play-in. They would not say, whoa, 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 on that development. Now, you can debate that. You can argue that. But I think their mindset is, The biggest piece of development that you want from young guys is learning how to win. And if this group of young guys strip down of a Vooch or a Kobe or Lonzo, whatever it looks like, if the product then is still winning and playing good basketball, I don't think they're going to interfere with that. They would let that go and just say, okay, 25's off the board for the draft. And there's a lot of teams that still think the 26 draft class is as good or just as good. So there's a 2-year window of real talented draft classes coming, 25 and 26.
So Zach LaVine is away for a few days for personal reasons. Looks like his wife is about to give birth to their third child.
Yep.
The deadline is 5 games away. Bulls play 4 or 5 on the road. Are we done seeing Zach LaVine? What does your gut tell you about whether Zach is on this team again?
I think the only way Zach moves is if the Bulls do get involved in a Jimmy Butler swap and they're a fourth team or even a fifth team in there. And obviously that would be a mega trade. There'd be a lot of pieces moving. Milwaukee's sneaky in all of this. I've talked to some people up in Milwaukee and they're hearing that they feel like Zach LaVine is a finishing piece, but do the Bulls want to take Middleton and Connaughton's contracts on? Maybe they'd waive Connaughton and just keep Middleton. And then I think he's got one more year that they would have to put up with. It might be his option. Do they want to take that on? I mean, you're assured of definitely dropping in the standings because you just can't count on Middleton at this point in his career. So you would definitely take that contract on. But the piece of this is, if you would ask me last year, yeah, for sure, they're going to do everything they can to move Zach. And I still think that's on the table, but I don't think they're as upset if they don't this year, because now you've got a guy that is not a better defender than he's ever been, but he's a more willing defender than he's ever been. Now you got a guy that understands what it's really like to be a leader, that actually talks to the young guys and has relationships with the young guys that he didn't have in the past. So he's not a bad mentor to have around if you can't move him, but their first goal is obviously still to move him.
Does that surprise you a little bit though, Joe? Because we are seeing him play, I think, beautiful offensive basketball. And like you said, he's been a willing defender. He's also, I think, kind of gone back to being the guy he was before he got clutched. So why is he not more of an attractive trade piece?
Well, I think teams are still collecting data on that change, to be honest with you. You know, and I think I mentioned you guys before, there's a new position in the NBA, and I'm guessing there's probably about six or seven teams that have it with a media guy who reaches out to media guys.
Yeah.
And you know, I've been asked several times about Zach and his personality change, and it's like still kind of getting out there and getting around that. No, this guy he's a different dude. He is not, I'm a businessman. He's about the businessman. And if you would have told me 3 years ago that Zach was going to flip to that kind of clutch mentality, I'd have been like, no, he's too nice. That's just not his makeup. But he did. He turned into evil Zach for a little while. And I wouldn't even say evil Zach, but he definitely changed and became about the business. And now I think fatherhood and I think a realization of his place in the NBA has put him where he just is happy with himself. He's happy with what he's doing. He's not satisfied with it. There's a big difference in that, but it isn't a fight against the organization. It isn't, I feel like this organization did me wrong. He's just going about his business, and it's nice to see.
Hey, as your Steelers steamroll towards mm-hmm. another season of being just above mediocre but not Super Bowl caliber, mm-hmm. wow. who do you want as your quarterback, Russell Wilson or Justin Fields on opening day next year?
You know, that's a good question from an organization that really doesn't even steamroll towards being mediocre, so I appreciate you reaching out to see how the better half lives. I would actually like to see them go with Fields and then draft somebody, or go with Fields, and if Fields fails, you know, you guys are used to top 10 picks. I am not in my lifetime, you know, at 55 years old, 56 years old.
You're ready for the Arch Manning thing?
It may take that quarterback class of next year to finally dip into it and actually see what losers feel like, and people that study mock drafts and Bears fans, basically, and to see how that half lives. Don't think it will happen because the standard is still the standard, and Mike Tomlin is 10 wins falling out of bed. But I would like them to take that route and say, okay, did Fields learn anything? Was the 4-2 a fluke? Can he bring this team into something different? And if not, I mean, you know, do you go into the draft? Do you gamble and maybe trade for a Joe Milton III? Do you look around and, you know, I think the possibilities are endless, and I think they have a GM. Joe as Milton. The Bears know. So I like what I saw that game. 6'5", an arm like that? Yeah, okay. I can do something with that. So
Justin Fields as a tank quarterback again, like in Joe's
not,
mind. That's
not
what he
necessarily
wants.
He would like, I mean, to see, hey, Justin, hey, Fields
soft tank.
I would like to see if it, yeah, exactly. I mean, they won games with Duck Hodges. I know that the Bears comprehend the Bears mind cannot comprehend winning games with bad to mediocre quarterbacks. But if Fields learned anything this year and actually is in a real culture and become something, you got a guy, what, 25, 26 years old? You say, okay, let's go. Let's build from here. If not, maybe it's time to dip back in and see how the lower class lives. So, you know, the options are endless. And if they dip into the bottom 10, it'd be a one-year thing. You guys live there. We would visit it. That's the difference.
I do think it's fair to point out that this was the best version of Justin Fields as a passer. I think there's a lot
Without
of good
question.
that happened, and I like that marriage with an Arthur Smith offense. I think he can really thrive to get a whole year in it, and it's clear that Tomlin likes him. Like I pointed it out, if you've been watching the Hard Knocks on the AFC North, Fields is in the offensive captain meetings. Like, that's weird for a backup quarterback to be in there, but he is in there. So I don't think it would be a weird thing to see him have success. Joe, we appreciate you. Thanks for joining us.
And you know what the nice thing is, boys? The AFC North gets to play the NFC JV North next year, so we all get to sit back and watch the show.
Oh, that'll be fun. We'll have you in the studio that week and the next week to laugh
at
you.
I'll be busy that week, buddy.
He's going to be busy that week for
all right.
sure.
Yeah, all right.
Bye, Joe. That is Joe Cowley of the Sun-Times. He is terrific.
He is good, clean, fun.
You ever know, I think a lot of Chicago Bears fans take pride in the fact that they hear one of their favorite players' name every single week. every single week in NFL play.
They did. And a Super Bowl coach took it to a completely new level.
We're going to talk to you about that. And at 4 o'clock, Charles Tillman is going to join us. Don't go anywhere. Spiegel and Holmes on the Score.
The Eagles defense is right back out there having to defend a lot more plays here. They could just run some basic execution.
Tommy Brown with his speed on the cross. Brown runs into DeGene. Ball is out. Eagles recover. Reed Blankenship came up with it for Philadelphia.
Unbelievable by Bond with the peanut punch with DeGene on the assist. Knocking it out of his arms right there. Oh, the hand. No, it feels a bit hit on the back of the hand, but it does cause a turnover. What a play by Bond.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
Highlights courtesy of Fox. That was in the NFC title game this past weekend. And apparently there is there's more to it than just getting the mention.
Yeah, this is a there's a few things going on here. The big story for us is that Peanut Tillman is everywhere. Absolutely everywhere.
Continues, like savoir-faire.
Dude continues to be incredibly relevant in now, in the modern day NFL, right the hell now. And we're very fortunate that he's going to be on this show in about 15 minutes.
Yes.
That's awesome.
We're looking forward to it because we can talk to him about all sorts of things. But the fact that there are that happens every week. Like, we joke about it every week that is now something that is etched into current and future NFL conversation.
The Eagles forced 22 fumbles in the regular season and recovered 10 of them. They were a plus 11 turnover margin. And all year long, apparently, they have been thinking about punching. Like, you see it around the league. They do it as well as anybody. And obviously, they did it 2 out of the 3 turnovers that they got from Washington in that game were courtesy of a peanut punch. And now we know why they are so good at it.
Here's what Nick Sirianni had to say about him really loving what they're doing with the peanut punch.
Just really proud of them, of how they've, you know, been able to tackle well while also taking the football away. It's something we emphasize an awful lot. You know, we've always done a good job of, you know, emphasizing it on offense. This year, we've taken another step and really emphasize it even more so this year as a defense. You know, every team meeting, we're looking at the ball security, any mistake that's made in a ball security. Every team meeting, we're looking at good strip attempts or missed strip attempt opportunities. And, you know, this year, Pat Dolan, our video guy, got me every peanut punch that he forced a fumble with his entire career. And we watched that on a loop as coaches. And then we showed that to the players as well. But, you know, so we emphasize the crap out of it because we know it's such a telling stat in this game. Our guys have done a nice job protecting it. Our defensive guys have done a nice job taking it away, as well as our special teams guys.
So, dude, every single peanut punch on a loop from the video guy.
First of all,
I'd like that. I'd like that as soon as possible. Does this exist? I mean, has anybody searched Twitter?
I would also like that as I'm preparing my Hall of Fame montages for potential Bears. It is on YouTube. Just a cut of the peanut punches. It's a really good video because it's not produced. It's just highlight.
Oh, that's
awesome.
Some
of that at the top of the hour.
If you were wondering, if you needed to be refreshed, he forced 44 fumbles in his career. 44. In his career.
Is that a trackable stat as far back as the NFL goes? I wonder.
I'm sure it's not
all the way back.
But for a defensive back to have that many.
That's outrageous.
It's outrageous. One might say it's Hall of Fame worthy.
Well, what we're talking about here is a legacy. We're talking about an impact on the game. Like, for instance, is Dick Fosbury in the track and field Hall of Fame?
He should be.
Dick
Fosbury flop.
He invented a way that changed the high jump forever.
People be like, well, I'll just jump over. And then he's like, well, maybe you could more easily do it if you went backwards.
Yeah, if you guys thought about running and then turning your body and then jumping and then curling over while being on your back. Dick Fosbury ought to be in the Track and Field Hall of Fame. I don't know if he is.
But I'll look at Wikipedia right now.
He's in two different fishing halls of fame. Oh, wow.
But this is the kind of company.
Somebody's reading Wikipedia. Yeah,
I'm trying to right now.
I mean, like, who's the first person who invented the one-handed backhand? I should know this. Was it Rod Laver? I don't know. But like,
is it one of the Menendez brothers?
Oh man, I saw it happen. I saw the Menendez brothers inventing the one-handed backhand. No, it probably is Rod Laver or somebody like that. You know, it's like certain of these maneuvers, that's what we're talking about with Peanut. This is legendary stuff.
On top of the fact that he also had 8 touchdowns as a defensive back. He also had, 38 interceptions in his career.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And serious legacy. I mean, there was a point during that game, I think Brady was talking about, it was after the Austin Eckler fumble, that Sirianni always leans on them. If a guy has the football and is getting up from the ground, that's when you punch. We'll ask Charles about it at the top of the hour. Like that is a specific moment that you always do it because the guy his equilibrium is off, his coordination is off. He's focused maybe on using one of the hands.
So he might not have 3 points of contact on the football. Right. He might be able to get it out that
exactly.
way.
Exactly. So, I mean, this is the kind of company that we're talking about here with Dick Fosbury.
It's so interesting to me, too, because there's an evolution. I don't think I've ever talked with Charles about this part of it. The evolution of it, because initially the rule was first man secure the tackle. Then the second guy who came in was there to take the ball out. And they would practice the punch and they would practice the strip, and they would practice the rip. Those are all the things that Lovie Smith had them doing in practice. And it still boggles my mind when I think about all of those practices that I watched at the beginning of Lovie Smith coming to the Bears and seeing defensive players pick up incomplete passes just so that they were in the mindset of, hey, you guys have the opportunity to score on your own. Don't worry about the offense. You guys can become the offense if you take the ball away. They was drilled in these guys. And I remember that first practice being like, what the hell are they doing? Like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
This doesn't make any sense of what they're doing. And then you go, oh, they're creating the idea of it and the muscle memory of it.
Yeah.
So that guys are moving towards the ball when they see that ball is loose.
It's interesting because it's become an acceptable way to think as a defender. Like, it's an add-on to a tackle, like a wrap, and then the second guy does it like you're talking about, or the one-hand wrap and the other-hand punch, that kind of thing. But, like, I remember so many DBs who didn't wrap up and didn't tackle, and instead would just go for the ball. And there was time, even during Charles's career, as you and I remember, of people was saying, I wish he'd stop doing that and actually just wrap up. And sometimes you'd
And then there's the Tennessee game where he does it 4 times in a game.
Right, and I remember being in those conversations like, no, there's nothing more valuable
than
like,
the ball.
Like if he misses 1 time and a guy gets 3 extra yards and then Charles wraps up, and then, oh, by the way, the next time he does it, there's a forced fumble that, like, turnovers are that valuable. It's totally okay, people. Now, you remember those conversations? You had to kind of convince people a little bit.
Oh, 100%. But the thing is that it's not just, like, if that were the only thing he did, then the conversation about him as a Hall of Famer, that would be the end of it. But it's not. Like, that's the part that frustrates me. That yes, he is and should be celebrated for this. Also, look at all of the big interceptions that he had.
Look at
all the times he scored on whether it was a peanut punch or an interception. The idea that he has 8 touchdowns is amazing. And the part that people don't talk about, and as someone who watched it play out, Charles
as the guy on the defensive end on field goals and how many field goals he disrupted throughout his career. Like, this was a guy that was a two-phase defensive player.
I'm looking at the top 10 in forced fumbles in NFL history, okay?
So that only goes back to, what, 93?
93. Here are the top 10. Let me see how low I can go before I get to another defensive back. I mean, it's crazy.
How low can you go?
Here are the defensive ends on the list. Robert Mathis, number one. Then Julius Peppers, Dwight Freeney, and John Abraham.
How many did Julius Peppers have?
51. Robert Mathis had 52. That's the leader all time since 93. So the top four defensive ends. Then Charles Tillman at 44. And then we go back to defensive ends for Jason Taylor, Terrell Suggs, DeMarcus Ware, O.C. Umanyora, Chandler Jones, James Harrison, T.J. Watt, Khalil Mack, Tamba Ali, and Leonard Little. Then we get to a linebacker in Lavonte David. In the top 15, it is all defensive ends. I guess Tamba Ali, defensive tackle, right?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
Hybrid player.
So you can call it top 13 is 12 edge rushers and Charles Tillman in forced fumbles in NFL history.
That's crazy. That's really crazy.
That is amazing. And looking here, I don't see. There's Brian Dawkins at number 20.
Figure he would probably be up there.
Charles Woodson at 21. Those are the next two defensive backs after Charles Tillman. And Brian Dawkins and Charles Woodson are 16 forced fumbles behind Charles Tillman.
That's wild. Let's talk with him. But before that, we're going to give you a couple of pair of tickets to go see Daniel Tosh at the Chicago Theater on June 25th. A pair of tickets goes to caller 6 to 312-540-0670 when you hear this.
I think pro athletes should be forced to use steroids. I think we as fans deserve the greatest athletes science can create.
I agree. Charles Tillman joins us next here on The Score.